and welcome to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today, we're joined by Assemblywoman Akilah Weber joining us. Akilah, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Very well. Very well. Thank you. You know, because of COVID, you know, a lot of us haven't, you know, got to know you or kind of hear your story. You know, we all know your mother and, you know, she was on the show in 2020 and she's, you know, was always great to have. So can you, you know, for those who don't know, can you kind of give us a little bit about your background and kind of what brought you to Sacramento?
Sure, of course. Well, I am a San Diego native, was born and raised actually in the district that I currently represent. After high school, I left for a very long time, about 16, 17 years, went to college, med school, residency, fellowship, and was working in other areas throughout the country. I moved back in 2013 because I wanted to start to give back to the community that had given so much to me. I am an OBGYN, board certified OBGYN. I did a fellowship in pediatric and adolescent gynecology. So when I moved back to San Diego, I founded the pediatric and adolescent gynecology division at Rady Children's Hospital, which is the children's hospital in San Diego. And I also started getting very active within my community and politically active as well. I kind of grew up around politics and understood the importance of always making sure that that different voices were at the table. And in 2018, a situation happened in my city where a young African-American high school senior female was slammed to the ground by one of our police officers. And at that time I decided I needed to do a little bit more. And so I ran for city council in my area, became the first Black American to be elected to city council in my city, and was, you know, doing some really important work on my local city council and still practicing. So being a mommy of two amazing little boys. And then the pandemic hit in 2020, and that really changed a lot. And so when this seat opened up, I decided to run for it for a couple of reasons. One, within the 79th Assembly District, we have had someone who's been a very strong advocate for the needs within our district, but also just a strong advocate up and down California in general. And wanted to make sure that that legacy continued, but also realizing that we need to make sure that we have diversity at the table when making laws and policies. And not only diversity in terms of your race or your gender, but also your background. And being in the midst of a pandemic, understanding that at the time in the assembly, there was one physician and one physician in the Senate, really drove home the point that we need to make sure that we have more people in the healthcare field, actually in Sacramento, formulating the laws and legislation that not only impacts how we practice medicine, but also the patients that we serve. And so that's why I decided to run, and I've been having a good time so far.
Wow. So back when you were on the city council, you were still working and practicing as a doctor?
I was, and because I live in a smaller city within the district, La Mesa, I love it. So I was able to do it because it was part-time, but I still practice now. So really? When I go home to San Diego on Fridays, two Fridays a month, half Fridays I have clinic, and then one half Friday I'm in the operating room.
Are you delivering babies, or what kind of OB?
So I'm not doing the obstetric part, but I am doing the surgical part.
Okay, wow. That's a lot on your plate. That's amazing.
But it's good because it keeps, you know, it keeps me doing the other part that I love, right? There was a lot of time and energy that I put into becoming a physician.
Exactly. What is it? Is it 4 years of med school? And then how long is the residency? How long before you can actually start practicing on your own?
I did 4 years of med school, 4 years of residency, and 2 years of fellowship. And that was after 4 years of college. So, and I loved what I was doing, especially some of the specialized surgeries that I was doing. So I'm very happy that I was able to continue a very small portion of my practice. I miss my adult patients. I miss delivering babies right now, but I'm so happy that I get a chance to still do my surgeries.
Kind of growing up, can you kind of tell us about, I guess, your family and kind of how it was kind of being raised by Shirley Weber?
I was very blessed with two amazing parents. So that were both very active. in their own regards. So, you know, everyone is very familiar with my mom. She, when I was growing up, was a professor at San Diego State, and also was on the school board. I think she joined when I was like maybe at the end of my elementary year, and then throughout 7th to 12th, she was still on San Diego Unified School Board. Always very active, a very powerful force within San Diego community. A great role model, someone to look up to. My father was very active as well. He was a personal injury attorney and then became a administrative law judge, but was very active within the NAACP, was past president of our local NAACP, was very active within the Black Lawyer Association, was very good friends with, you know, Speaker Willie Brown and all of the people up here. So I kind of grew up with two parents in that space.
Right.
And I actually honestly never thought I would go into politics, which, you know, into medicine, because you see the good, the bad, and the ugly. But what they instilled in both my brother and I was the importance of giving back, the importance of advocacy, and the importance of making sure that everyone has a voice. And for those who either don't use their voice or don't know how to use their voice, it is your responsibility to use it for them. So, you know, there are a lot of people that kicked down a lot of doors for me to be able to get here. A lot of people whose shoulders I stand on, a lot of people who unfortunately died fighting for the rights that I have today. And so it is my responsibility to keep those doors open, to open up more doors, and to make sure that we have a California that really works for everyone.
Yeah. How's your experience been coming up to Sacramento? You kind of came, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of a session. How has it been getting acclimated and kind of, you know, getting your footing here when, you know, everything's just, I guess, so new and, you know, evolving with kind of changing and things like that?
It's been very, very interesting. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know what to expect, or you know what's going on. And I'm like, no, I had a life in San Diego. I had two jobs. I had, you know, two boys. So I wasn't necessarily focused on the inner workings of Sacramento. But, you know, I really appreciate my other assembly members, my other assembly colleagues. They were very warm and welcoming. I did come in April, which was actually after the deadline to submit bills. But two of my colleagues did give me one each of their bills so that I was able to carry some bills last year. And they've just been, you know, very good if I've had any questions. Now, we're still in a pandemic, so still kind of doing this, like meeting people via Zoom-ish, which right. is, you know, different for Sacramento, but it's been good so far.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting talking to all the members about the new swing space. Kind of what are your thoughts and how are you enjoying your new office?
You know, I like it. So, you know, if you talk to people, right. I know, if you talk to people who have been here for a while, they don't like it. I even, right. So you can't see, but like right across the street is the Secretary of State's office, right? Yeah. So I know, right? So my mom came over and she was like, oh, you know, and a lot of people who were over there longer are like, oh, but I actually like it. I love sun. I love light. I love windows. This place is a lot, I think, overall for everyone's well-being, just healthier because there's just so much sunlight that I actually like it. I'm happy here.
That's funny. We were talking to Mia Bonta yesterday and she felt the same thing. I was like, oh yeah, it's open. It's new. It's great. So yeah, it seems like the new members are liking the space more than the older ones. It's funny.
Yeah. If you had spoken to me in the old space, you wouldn't be seeing this light back here. You know, I didn't have any windows in my office and, you know, I understand the importance of light and sunlight. I went to med school in Rochester, New York, where it was gray for like half the year.
Right.
So, you know, it's important to have your sunlight.
You know, so I guess is this, I guess, you know, the beginning of the year, the governor comes out with his budget. Kind of what are some of your thoughts on the budget? And kind of what are some of the things that I guess you'd like to see prioritized more?
Well, you know, we are still in the midst of a pandemic. And so I was very happy to see that that there are still money and resources being allocated to make sure that we have testing sites, that we are still continuing with education, and that if we need to ramp up again within the hospital system, that we will have the ability to do that. And so that, you know, for me, because that right now is kind of on the forefront of my mind and hopefully most people's mind, to make sure that we are able to get through this and hopefully stay out of it. But if we end up having to go back, that we're ready to go back. You know, the other issue that was very important, and again, dealt with COVID, had to do with paid sick leave. And so that had expired back in September. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get something done in the last legislative session. And so I was very happy that we were able to do that this time. So with his initial budget priorities and the initial things that we voted on, I've been very happy with the things that we've been able to focus on.
Yeah. So I guess we just had the big deadline for bill introduction. Kind of what are some of the things you're working on? And I guess how many bills did you end up with?
So as of right now, I have about 14 or 15 bills. And I'm actually really, really happy with my bill package. It's very, I like to say diverse, kind of touch on some big priorities, but also some things that came out of the district. So like I said, you know, we're still in the midst of this pandemic. And one of the things that's important to me, not only as a physician, but, you know, as a mom with kids in school, is that we are able to keep all Californians healthy and safe, that we're able to keep our schools open and our businesses thriving. And so there are a group of us that people affectionately call the Vax Caucus or the Vaccine Caucus.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so with us, we have introduced 8 bills so far dealing with vaccines or around COVID in general. And so the bill that I am pushing out from that caucus is AB 1797, which deals with updating the California Immunization Registry. And what this would do is, one, give schools the ability to have, you know, access to the immunization registry, the California Immunization Registry. They do have limited access at this point, but only can really only report on those vaccines that are required. And so, you know, it's hard right now for them to say who's been vaccinated with COVID vaccine or not, because that's not a required vaccine at this point. And it also requires physicians that give out vaccines to make sure that they're putting this information into the vaccine registry. And then the other thing the bill does, which is very important, is that as you're putting the information into the vaccine registry, you also input their race and ethnicity unless the particular patient or parent opts out. And the reason why this is so important is because we know about health disparities. We know about issues as far as who's getting immunizations and who is not. And so this is actual data to prove that there are some disparities there or there aren't. And if there are disparities, then we can focus our efforts and resources on those communities to help make sure that we're getting the information to them, and that we're also providing access for those communities to become vaccinated. So that's a big part, big priority for me. The other priority for me is really closing the academic achievement gap. That's been out there for a very long time, and it's not moving. And the way in which we do that is by, one, keeping kids in school, and two, making sure that we're giving resources to those that need it the most. And so I actually have 2 bills that I've introduced around this. One is AB 2598. And what that is a restorative justice bill. And that basically, within the California Department of Education, would establish baseline restorative justice practices, or standardized restorative justice practices, for all schools here in California, and would require that the school districts use those first instead of the more disciplinary things that we have seen with certain ethnic background or some socioeconomic background. And so I'm very happy about that one. And then the other one is
an example on that one.
So for example, like if someone, let's say you hit a kid, mm-hmm. right? And instead of suspending you or, you know, taking something away from you, you have a discussion about why that was wrong. You as the child go and apologize to that other child. You hear from that other child about how that child felt by being hit. Mm-hmm. And you just have more of a, it's not a discipline, but it's a learning method. Right. And it's done. It's done. Studies have shown that it works, that when you do these things in schools, that you have a much lower rate of suspension, you have better attendance, and ultimately you have better graduation rates. And you can see differences in how children are, quote, disciplined based on race and socioeconomic status. So this is, would basically be something that just says, you know what, this is a method that we need to instill first in all of our schools before we go to the suspension or the expulsion or the detention, which are all negative factors. Another bill is 2744 that looks at LCFF funding. And what it would do is it would establish a new category to essentially provide funding to the lowest subgroup or the lowest performing subgroup of students that's not already receiving funding. So right now, what do we know? We know that African Americans are at the lower end of the achievement gap, and it has been that way for a very, very, very long time. And so since they at this time are the lowest performing subgroup, there would be more money and more resources sent to the schools based on where you have a higher rate of African Americans to implement programs and things to help close that gap, whether it's tutoring, whether it's, when I was growing up, we had mentors at the school that worked supposedly just with African-American males, but they ended up actually working with everybody. But it really helped out as far as the academic achievement and the outcomes of our African-American males. And so the LCFF bill would create this new subcategory to give more money, more resources to hopefully close that gap that unfortunately is just continuing to widen. So that's my step around education. As a doctor, as an OBGYN, I'm very much interested in reproductive health, reproductive justice, and access. And unfortunately, we are, you know, in a situation at this point where it is highly likely that Roe versus Wade will be overturned. And what we're going to see here in California as a result of that is that we're going to have more people coming into our state looking for those services that they cannot receive in their states. It is estimated that if Roe versus Wade is overturned, that there'll be about 26 states that in which you will not be able to receive those services. And so there is a group of us within the Women's Caucus that are working on a variety of different bills. And my specific bill deals with funding, that funding gap, providing a pool of money to allow for providers to do these procedures and get reimbursed for them, whether or not the particular patient has insurance or if their insurance just refuses to pay for it. And so that is an anticipation of what we all kind of think is going to happen coming down from the Supreme Court. And then I've got some local things. We did a call out in my community, in my district, to say, hey, what kind of bills would you like to see passed this upcoming year, or at least introduced this upcoming year? And one that was very interesting, we turned into a bill, AB 1630. It's called the Vulnerable Defendant's Right Act to a Fair Trial. And this came out of a story where there was an individual who was deemed incompetent to stand trial in one county. And before competency could be reestablished, they were arrested in another county, tried, and convicted.
Wow.
And no one had even ever checked to see what happened in this other county. And so this would basically mandate that, one, you check to make sure that this particular person had not been deemed incompetent. And two, if they had been deemed incompetent, that at some point competency was restored before you can take them and put them on trial. And, you know, I'm very proud that that actually came out of my district. One of the constituents actually suggested that. And then one of the things that I did do when I first got here was I got the other delegation, San Diego delegation, together to do an audit of our county jails, because there are a lot of deaths in San Diego County jails, a lot of unanswered questions. And that audit was just released a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, unfortunately, what it showed is what people had been saying for a long time. San Diego County jails have the highest rate of death in any county in the state. And there were some glaring, glaring deficiencies, some glaring things that really need to be changed. Our standard of how we treat our inmates, especially with their physical and mental health, needs to be raised. And so my office is now working on a bill to basically improve the standards statewide, because one of the things that the audit brought was, yes, San Diego County is bad, but there's really no specific county in California that we can point to and say, this is the one that you should be modeling yourself after. There are national standards, but we don't have like the golden county here. And so we're working on a bill to just raise our standards to align with national standards. You know, when you're in jail or when you're sent to prison or while you're waiting for trial, because unfortunately about half of these people were just waiting for trial and died. It shouldn't be a death sentence. And so we need to make sure that not only in San Diego County, but in all 58 counties here in California, if you happen to be incarcerated, that you are taken care of and that you don't die just based on people not doing what they should be doing or listening to your physical or mental needs.
Right. You know, I guess kind of touch back upon your your piece of legislation dealing kind of with the Roe v. Wade issue. And a lot of people are talking about that, and a lot of people are fearful about that. And you kind of hear this kind of dialogue of, oh, well, we're in California, like what, it doesn't affect us. Can you kind of, I guess, kind of touch upon that thought? And that, you know, that's something I never thought about, is that, you know, people will be coming here to getting abortions, and kind of what other fallouts do you see that?
Yeah, you know, we, in a sense, we are very fortunate here when you're dealing with Roe versus Wade. Before I moved back to, California, I was actually living in Dallas, Texas, and practicing in Dallas, Texas. And, you know, when I was there, I just saw everything that was going on even back then. And I was like, this state has a war against women's health. And so we're very fortunate in that. I don't think anyone can say that here in California. But you still have the ability, an insurance company can still say that we're not going to cover this, and you have to come out of pocket. In some rural areas, you still may have to go farther than you would like to go to receive the care in terms that you would need. And so, you know, even here in California, we can still have some improvements. And then, you know, when I saw that when this last, not this president, but the president before was elected, I started talking to a lot of my colleagues in this space. And I said, what are we going to do? Because I see this happening. I see Roe versus Wade happening. What are we going to do here in California? Mm-hmm. Because this is going to become a place where people come to, and they're going to need our services. We're going to need to beef up in terms of the number of providers that we have that can perform certain procedures. Like I said, we're going to need to also make sure that there's a funding source. So even though we don't have to really worry about it not being available here in California. If we don't beef up some of these things, then either one, your insurance can say that it's not going to pay for it, or two, because we have the mass influx of people from outside, you have to wait longer to get the procedure or the care that you need. And so we've got to make sure that neither one of those happens. Right. And that's why these bills and these discussions right now are so very important.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It seemed like, you know, forever that, you know, Roe v. Wade would never be overturned, and they talk about it and you're like, yeah, but is that really going to happen? And it just seems so surreal that, you know,
I know.
here we are
I
talking about this today.
I never thought, I honestly never thought, like 10 years ago, I would have never thought that. But, you know, there are a lot of things that have happened over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years
right.
that we never thought would actually happen.
Between 2016 and 2020.
I know, right? But unfortunately, when you have something like Roe versus Wade, because even like the voting rights, right? You know, like this is something that we're talking, and who would think that we're talking about voting rights? Who would think that we are seeing states implement modern day Jim Crow laws? Like, you would think that we were past that. But unfortunately, I think what we're all learning is that some things that we thought were permanent and solidified really aren't. And so we have to make sure that we find ways to permanently solidify a lot of these things. I honestly, before this, had no idea that the voting rights was something that was voted on every, you know, so many years.
Right.
And then this year, or this, you know, this last time when it wasn't voted on, it's like, wait a minute, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And so it's been interesting, but I think it should hopefully fire some sense of a passion, and once again, fire in a lot of us, especially our youth, to say that we've got to always be awake and make sure that we're understanding what's going on, and not take certain things that we think are going to be here forever for granted.
You know, you were talking about how you were in this, what is it? What do you guys call the vaccine caucus? Is that what you guys call yourself?
That's what we're, yeah, that's what we're kind of known as. It's, and we got together, we started this actually during the summer recess last year, mm-hmm. because we kind of saw that there may be an uptick in COVID around wintertime. But it's myself, Assemblymember Lowe, Assemblymember Wicks, Senator Pan, Senator Newman, and Senator Weiner. And we've been working on these bills.
And kind of, you know, I guess, is it surprising to you seeing this kind of vaccine hesitancy and, you know, a lot of discussion about kids and vaccines and, you know, it kind of bewildering to me and a lot of people, but, you know, it seems to be a major issue. And kind of, what do you guys expect? And, you know, how do you deal with this?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's definitely unfortunate. It's, you know, I think that over time, there has just been a growing number of people who are just against vaccines in general. But with this particular virus and this particular vaccine, it was so politicized. And I, in my lifetime, do not remember anything like this being politicized, you know, whether it was the flu or Ebola somewhere else. Like, I don't remember, you know, it's science is science. And so I think because it was so politicized, that's why we're seeing what we're seeing today. I mean, and I was talking to a friend earlier, because I was looking at like vaccination rates from different states. And, you know, you can see the difference, unfortunately, in what are considered quote blue states and what are considered quote red states in terms of the percent of their population that is vaccinated. So that's why we're seeing it this time. I mean, I think that it's natural to be concerned about something new. I admit, you know, when I got the vaccine, I was like, oh my goodness, because I was practicing at the time, I was doing surgeries. And so the first week that it came out, I had to get it.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, But now we've had so many people that have gotten the vaccine that, you know, there have been more people that have gotten it than we've had in any previous study or trial or anything before anything came out, that, you know, a lot of the concern or the rhetoric is completely unfounded. There was a mother at my son's school who said, oh, I'm not going to have my daughter get the vaccine because I want her to have children in the future. I was like, what? Wait, huh? You know, right. So because now there's this thought that it's going to cause infertility. So it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because it is a virus that is so very contagious. And for those who are not vaccinated, it is potentially so very deadly. And, you know, it's also a virus that you don't know once you get it, what that long haul syndrome is going to be for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have, my dad is from Louisiana. I went to college in Louisiana, and I have family in Louisiana that think a little different than I do. And I spoke with one of my cousins a few weeks ago and found out that he had just gotten out of the hospital because he's not vaccinated. And he had been in with COVID for 22 days in the ICU, 18 of those days. Because he believed that the vaccine had killed someone. So it's... It is unfortunate that it's been so politicized because it allows for all this misinformation and disinformation to get out there and just run rampant in our communities.
Right. And I guess, how has it been kind of being a mom and being now an elected, I guess, full-time elected and also working a doctor? You know, how are you spending time with finding time for the family and being able to balance that?
Yeah, my oldest is 10, my baby is 8, and my oldest is just like, whatever, you know, as long as you do my math with me, I'm fine, because when dad does it with me, that's when I get a C. Uh-oh. So, and my baby's like, as long as you come home on Thursdays and you don't leave until Monday morning, you know, I can deal with it. Right. But I make sure that I spend as much time with them when I am back in the district as possible. It's baseball season. I'm so excited. We're all so excited about that. But I also see them. I call them every morning before they go to school, but I also set up Zooms with them every day so that I can do their homework with them. Oh, and cool. So I just copy their homework from their books. I bring it up here with me and I either go through it with them or with my son. Like I said, I actually do the math. Which has been interesting. I'm like Google, like, did I do this right? Or I'm on my calculator, like, did I do this decimal fraction thing right? You know, just to make sure that there's still that connection and also academically that they're not going to be like, you know, falling behind or anything like that. Right. But we're making it work. I make dinner for the week on Sundays for them. So because they don't like their father's cooking. So I make dinner for them to eat throughout the week. And
are they eating out behind your back?
Well, I check when I get back. Like, yeah. How much of this food have you guys eaten? Right. Because I didn't want them to end up eating out or just skipping meals. And, right. You know, their uniforms and stuff are ready for them for the week. So I do as much as I can over the weekend to make sure that their week is, you know, seamless and smooth. And then on the weekends, I spend as much time with them as I can. And I take them to different events. They don't like it, but you know what? I had to do it when I was younger and right. I turned out okay. So
That's too funny. And do you see your mom often up here in Sacramento, or is she up and down the state pretty frequently?
She's up and down the state. I actually stay at her place. So when she happens to be in town, I see her, but I will usually see her at least one day on the weekends because she wants to see her grandkids.
Right.
So I'll take them over there.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like, you know, you're going to be busy this year.
Yes, I'm excited.
Yeah. A lot of exciting stuff. It should be interesting to see, how you guys, you know, take it on and, you know, thank you for your work and especially taking on that vaccine issue. You know, that's always a bear. And,
yes, you know, I know. Trust me.
Very grateful for you guys.
Social media has shown me how challenging that is.
Exactly. So yeah, you're gonna have your hands full with that. But best of luck to you this session, and excited to see how it goes. And hopefully, we can touch base with you later in the year to see how everything went.
Definitely. Thank you so much for this. I enjoyed it.
Great talking with you.
All right. Bye.